This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the In Focus podcast. I'm your host, Jeev Sampath. Earlier this week, a 7-judge bench of the Supreme Court ruled that MPs and MLAs are not immune to criminal prosecution on bribery charges related to their votes or speech in parliament or state assemblies. This judgment overturns an earlier ruling of the Supreme Court in the 1998 Jharkhand Mukti Morcha case. In this case, the majority opinion had held that MPs and MLAs enjoyed immunity from prosecution with regard to how they vote or speak in the House. Now, Article 105(2) of the Constitution does confer on MPs immunity from prosecution in respect of their speech or voting in Parliament. And the same immunity is granted to MLAs by Article 194(2) of the Constitution. So what exactly prompted the Supreme Court to strip MPs and MLAs of this immunity? What was the original case that set off the chain of events culminating in this judgment? And what are the implications of this verdict? We explored this judgment in detail in this episode of In Focus, and we have with us Krishna Das Rajagopal, The Hindu's legal correspondent. Krishna, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to In Focus.
Thank you, Sampath, for having me.
So Krishna, to start with, can you give a quick overview of the original case, the JMM bribery case, and the judgment related to it, which has now been overturned by the Supreme Court?
So let's do a little background here. 1991, there was the Lok Sabha elections to the 10th Lok Sabha. And then the Congress, was the single largest party elected, and it formed a minority government. And very shortly after, there was a motion of no confidence. And the government needed 14 votes against the no confidence motion. So JMM and JDS MLAs, I'm sorry, MPs, they 14 of them, they voted against the no confidence motion. The motion was defeated, and then the trouble started. And the CBI filed a charge sheet. There were rumors of bribery. CBI filed a charge sheet, and there was charges of conspiracy against the JMM and JDAS, Ajit Singh faction, MPs, and the charges, there were accusations against the then Prime Minister P.V. Narasimha Rao and also other Congress MPs, and of bribe giving. And the MPs, the JMM MPs, went to the High Court. The High Court quashed the charges. I'm sorry, dismissed the plea to quash the charges. And then they went to the Supreme Court in appeal. So one of the questions that came up before the Supreme Court was, they asked is, aren't the MPs immune under, as you said, under Article 105 from bribery prosecution? Don't they have the immunity? Do they have the parliamentary privilege? Won't the privilege protect them from prosecution, criminal prosecution in a criminal court? So then we had, there was a majority opinion written by the then Chief Justice of India, Barucha, Justice Barucha, S.P. Barucha. And he basically said, yes, the MPs are immune from bribery prosecution or prosecution under Article, and they have immunity under Article 105. And there was a very interesting situation brought about by the majority judgment. That is, they said, the majority basically said that if an MP took a bribe and voted in favor of the bribe giver or spoke in favor of the bribe giver in the House, then he is protected. There is immunity. And what happened was that in the JMM case, the JMM MPs, most of them voted in favor. The 14 of them voted in favor, and the leader, Ajit Singh, did not vote. He abstained from voting. So finally, the Supreme Court majority decision in the JMM case, that is the P.V. Narasimha Rao case, came to such a stand that those who voted, took bribe and voted in favor of the government then, they got immunity, but Ajit Singh did not get immunity because he abstained from voting. And what Barucha said is that immunity will extend to only those who voted in the parliament or who speak in the parliament. So you have to take a bribe and you have to perform your parliamentary function. You have to either speak or vote. If you don't do that, then you don't have privilege. You've just taken plainly a bribe and you're sitting comfortable, which is not protected by the immunity clause. So, but there was also a minority view by Justice S.C. Agarwal on the, it was five-judge bench. S.C. Agarwal gave a minority view. He said, if an MP or MLA takes a bribe, he has committed a crime. And the MP is liable the moment for criminal prosecution, the moment the bribe is received or an offer of a bribe is agreed on. It does not matter whether the MP follows up the receiving of a bribe with a speech in the parliament or a vote cast in favor of a bribe giver. So the moment you take the bribe, you are liable for prosecution. In such cases, if you've taken a bribe, which is a crime by itself, then you are not immune under Article 105, or if you're an MLA, under Article 194 of the Constitution. So the immunity does not extend to acts of bribery. But that was a minority decision, and the majority won the day in 1998.
Right. I mean, it's a very interesting kind of reasoning there, Krishna. Thank you so much for explaining it so well. But I'm just curious, Justice Barucha, you said, I mean, he has taken the point of view that if you take a bribe and then you go and vote or speak, so he divides it into two parts is what I can make out. So the parliamentary side of it, whether you're voting or speech, or you're giving a speech, that is protected in terms of immunity. But the bribe taking is not. So if you take a bribe and you don't do anything, then the parliamentary immunity doesn't kick in and the bribe taking in itself is an offense and you can get prosecuted for it. I mean, that sounds like a...
Exactly. So,
If
you're an MP or MLA and you follow up the act of taking a bribe with a parliamentary function, for example, you speak in favor of the bribe giver or you cast a vote in favor of the bribe giver, then you're performing a parliamentary function and the immunity kicks in. But if you don't if you don't do the parliamentary function and you just keep the bribe with you and don't do anything, which is what Ajit Singh did, or for that matter, if you take a bribe and you vote against the bribe giver, then you are liable for prosecution, which is a very paradoxical situation that the JMM bribery case.
What if you take the bribe to not do anything? What if the bribe is for you to just abstain, or bribe is just not turn up?
No, the basic thing is here, the logic was that if you follow it up by doing a parliamentary function, that is, you abstain. For example, as you said, now, this is what happened to Ajit Singh, where he took the bribe or allegedly took the bribe and he didn't do anything. He abstained from voting. So he was there in the parliament, but he didn't vote against or for. He just abstained. And he was made liable by the Supreme Court in the JMM bribery case. Whereas those with him, his other leaders of JMM, they took the bribe and they voted in favor of the government. They were immune. So the thing is that the parliamentary function basically cancels the alleged act of taking a bribe, which is a crime in itself.
Right. So what was the reasoning of the, let's say, before we go to the next question, Krishna, I just want to ask you, what if they take the bribe to vote in favor of the government, but then they do the opposite of that? What if you have taken a bribe, it will be the same as abstaining, I suppose, is that? Or in this case, you have taken a bribe, let's say, to vote yes, but then you actually vote no.
Very simply put, you are immune from from prosecution if you make the bribe giver happy.
Okay. Very strange.
I think your question is answered in Sita Soren's case, where she took a bribe, allegedly took a bribe, and she voted in favor of her own party candidate. Which is, she took a bribe from an independent candidate, and she voted in favor of her own candidate.
Okay, she did not make the bribe giver happy in this case.
Yeah.
Okay,
So
okay.
she, so yeah, so we will talk about that. Yeah,
Yeah, okay, fine.
generally.
So before we go to that, so let's talk about a little bit on what the seven judge bench reasoned and what was their rationale in reversing this Justice Barucha-led majority opinion, you know, of 1998 and then taking away the immunity enjoyed by legislators, whether you're taking the bribe and voting or taking the bribe and abstaining. I think what is their stand now and what was the logic of their decision?
Okay, so I think we'll start with what Sita Soren case was. I mean, the judgment that came on the seven judge
Right,
bench.
right.
So Sita Soren is a JMM MLA, and what happened was that she came and appealed to the Supreme Court against the Jharkhand High Court judgment, which said that she's liable for prosecution for taking bribery. Okay, now what happened was that in March 2012, there was an election to the Rajya Sabha, and two Rajya Sabha seats from the Jharkhand, And the allegation was that she accepted a bribe from an independent candidate for casting a vote in favor of that person. Now, there was open balloting in Aris in Rajya Sabha, and it was proved that she did not cast a vote in favor of the candidate that she allegedly took money from. And in fact, she voted in favor of her party. There was a second election. The first election was cancelled. There was a second election. Again, she voted in favor of the party, her own party. Now, again, prosecution started against her. And she was charged, cheated for bribery. Now, Soren went to the High Court, the Jharkhand High Court, and argued that, look, there was this 1998 JMM bribery case. And all MLAs are immune from prosecution under 194. In her case, it's 194. And they're all immune. We have privilege and we are all immune from prosecution because of this PV Narasimha Rao judgment. The High Court basically pointed out that, look at the majority. High Court pointed her to the majority view, which is what the law is or was. Till this recent judgment came in, the seven judge bench judgment came in. The High Court said, pointed to the majority view, saying that if you take a bribe and you do not vote in favor of the bribe giver, you are not entitled to protection, which is what the High Court said, which is exactly what the majority view also said. So so basically the High Court was saying that if you had taken the bribe and you had voted in favor of the bribe giver, then you are immune. That's what the majority judgment in JMM bribery case said. So, but you didn't do that. You took the bribe and you voted against the bribe giver. So you are liable for prosecution. Now, she was flummoxed and she came to the Supreme Court in appeal. And then, you know, the Supreme Court started relooking at what it had done. And basically said that, you know, let's go into the correctness of this majority view, because they said first came to a three judge bench referred it to a five judge bench, and the five judge bench understood that there was an incongruous situation that had arisen where, you know, an MP or MLA taking a bribe will be protected if he votes or speaks in favor of the bribe giver. And on the other hand, an MP or MLA who takes a bribe and does not vote or even make a speech in favor of the bribe giver, as in Sita Soren's case, right? And or abstains from voting, which was the case with Ajit Singh in 1991, then such lawmakers don't have immunity. So the issue was then referred to the seven judge bench in because, you know, the 1998 judgment was by a five judge bench. So they had to refer it to a larger bench. So they went to, so the issue went to the seven judge bench in September last year. And the seven judge bench basically accepted the minority view of Justice S.C. Agarwal. So that's what happened. And would you want me to go into the reasoning also?
So basically, just let me know if the way I sum it up is okay. And if not, you can go into the reasons. So Justice Agarwal's view basically was that if you have taken a bribe, then you will be prosecuted for taking a bribe, regardless of whether you are an MP or MLA, and their parliamentary privilege does not extend to a protection from prosecution for bribe taking, which is not a parliamentary function anyway. Is that what he said?
Yeah, so basically he said that the offense of taking a bribe is complete as soon as you take the bribe or you accept the offer. It doesn't matter whether what you do in the floor of the house. You are liable for prosecution or investigation if you have taken a bribe. So he doesn't marry the offense with the parliamentary function. So he basically tears it apart and says this is bribe. You are punishable. No, it doesn't matter whether what you've done with the money or what you've done in return for the money. So that's what S.C. Agarwal says, and that is what the 7-judge bench also ends up confirming.
Okay. So then, what is the logic of this Article 105(2)(1), Article 194(2)? I mean, if this is Justice Agarwal's reasoning, then how does he reconcile deal with this with the fact that in the Constitution of India, you've got these two articles which gives them immunity? What was the thinking behind giving them immunity at all in the first place? Was it because to give them protection from prosecution for, corruption, like we've seen, like so many chief ministers getting summoned from ED? They're also MLAs, right? There is no immunity for them. Like, what exactly is going on here?
See, the primary objective of 105 and 194 is that, is free speech. That is, these two articles in their various, levels, like 105 for the parliamentarians and 194 for the legislators, the state legislators. They basically, these two articles basically institutionalizes the right of an MP or MLA to cast a vote or speak freely in the House. So the primary objective is free speech, that they are allowed to speak or cast a vote without feeling scared about the consequences. And you have to understand that the article does not protect legislators or give them blanket immunity for a crime that they have committed outside their duties or obligations as lawmakers. For example, you take a bribe, that's an offense. And you are not put on a pedestal because you are an MP or MLA. You have to, the case has to be investigated, and the law has to take its process on. So basically, the court, the 7-judge bench, puts in a twofold test for this. When can an MP or MLA claim immunity? This is also gone into by the 7-judge bench. So the 7-judge bench basically says that there are two circumstances. One is when the actions an MP or MLA can claim immunity if her actions or speech is done for the purpose of upholding the dignity and authority of the House as a collective body. Second, if the person, the lawmaker, makes a speech or votes or acts in any way in his in her official capacity is done. They basically as a committee, as a member of a committee, parliamentary committee, or as a legislature, if he votes or speaks in completion of his official obligation as a lawmaker. So, if they have done this as part of their parliamentary function, these duties, the action or vote was or whatever the speech was made as a part of their obligation or duties as a lawmaker, then they can claim immunity from criminal prosecution. But, as you say, the court also says that taking bribes to vote or speak in a certain manner basically hampers free speech in the House itself, because the speaker or the voter is acting under an inducement. And this affects the dignity of the House also.
Right. So, Krishna, I was just wondering, so before this Supreme Court judgment, which strips away immunity from prosecution for bribery and so on, before this, they had immunity of some kind, one assumes. Then how do we understand that so many MPs and MLAs get prosecuted for corruption? So what happened to their immunity then? Weren't they protected from prosecution earlier?
See, I think Sampath, nothing can stop a powerful executive from foisting bribery charges against an MP or MLA. You're perfectly right. You know, it can, an executive can do that. It can foist a case. But this judgment, basically, the court was faced with a paradoxical situation. You know, it was an error. It was an error committed by them in the JMM bribery. You know, it was really an incongruous situation where, you know, a person taking a bribe and voting in favor of the bribe giver is given immunity. So you could act under inducement. So this went against the very grain of 105 and 194, which basically said free speech. Because if you've taken a bribe and you are speaking something or you're voting, you're acting under the influence of an inducement, a monetary inducement. So that is what the court, it had to correct this legal error, and it said we cannot perpetuate this error, and we had to correct it. So that is what they did. Now, you know, the thing is that there are many wrongs that can happen, the court basically said that, you know, but let's correct this one which has come before us. I think that was the thought behind the judgment. Because we have to correct this thing that we have perpetuated. There are several other wrongs. The powerful executive can bring in, as you said, bribery charges, you know, frame the MPs, MLAs. But that doesn't mean that we should not correct this wrong. So I think that's what they basically had in mind when they did this. And unhappily for us, in our legal system, the courts can, I mean, we do have the PIL where the courts can call for cases and, you know, correct remedial measures, the writ jurisdiction. But mostly our judicial system works on the, you know, they are problem solvers. A problem comes before them and then they solve that problem. So, and if, as you say, if there are other problems cropping up from this, somebody files a case and they will deal with that. So it's like
right,
that.
Yeah. Right, right. No, thank you so much for putting that in perspective, Krishna. I mean, I was just wondering, I'm not a legal expert here, but you are. So I was just curious to understand, like, because this makes it clear that the Supreme Court was interested in correcting this particular legal error, this paradox, this contradiction.
Yeah, it's a very, very narrow legal error that they made. Yes.
Right, right. No, because I mean, as a layperson, as an analyst, I mean, what strikes me, and I'm sure it strikes many readers and listeners, you know, who are tracking political developments in our country today. Now, there is this particular case which says, you know, lawmakers are not immune to prosecution for bribery, etc. But then at the same time, we do read in the newspaper reports of horse trading, you know. Horse trading doesn't happen without bribery being involved at some point. And horse traded MLAs, quote unquote, they do go ahead and form a new government in a new alliance and they become ministers and apparently nothing seems to happen to them, you know. So where is this whole bribery being a target of criminal prosecution? To what extent is it really is effective and how efficiently the whole process takes place? That's something, you know, one just sort of comes up in one's mind.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, the horse trading, I think, you know, we can narrow down to this, like, we're talking about horse trading, they must have, as you said, there must have been some bribe given somewhere. And in the legal definition of bribery is not just money, but it can be inducements, favors, posts, you know, and general,
I mean,
corruption.
Clearly, if MLAs are going and taken away and put in a resort, 7-star resort somewhere, I mean, clearly there is something which is detrimental, let us say, to the dignity of the house, right?
Yeah. So yes. So then we have the Prevention of Corruption Act. There is prosecution under that. So basically, what we see here is that we have the court here saying that the MLAs or MPs cannot be put on a pedestal. They're not immune from prosecution. If they've done a wrong, let them be prosecuted. Let the cases be investigated. And as you know, some years back, the court also gave a judgment saying that, you know, there should be special courts for MPs and MLAs for criminal charges. And so that's also, I believe, there's been a general trend in the court for a long time that, you know, we should go against the criminalization of politics. So maybe if you look at it, you know, it can be a glass full and half empty and half full thing. But if you look at it, we can see that, you know, this is one more leaf to that episode of, you know, trying to get rid of criminalization, criminals in politics, you know, inducements and general, a smear in parliamentary discussions, like a person acting under inducement in a parliament where the debate should be free and fair and fearless. Somebody is acting in, speaking after taking money. I think there's a certain distaste to that.
Right. I mean, that's a good perspective to have, Krishna. I mean, as you said, you know, there is a broader trend which you have observed, you know, of the Supreme Court, the judiciary taking, you know, trying to do something about this criminalization in general of politics. And if they think that this is one more little step towards decriminalization and sort of cleaning up, so to speak, the entire system, I think we could probably look at it as part of that entire process.
Well, I think, Sampath, I repeat, I'm sorry to interrupt. I repeat again. So they found that there was something wrong. They've corrected this wrong. And there may be several wrongs, but that doesn't mean that they should not correct this wrong that has come before them. So they've just rectified this. And they're open to other cases or offshoots of what may happen from this, you know. So that's how it's an ongoing process.
Right. I mean, as you said rightly, it's a problem-solving court. And I think they've solved this problem. And of course, if there are other problems we would like them to solve, I think the legal activists and, people to bring it to the court's attention. Thank you so much, Krishna. It was a pleasure talking to you, discussing this very complicated case, but it's a fascinating one as well. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.